Okay, I welcome to Mindfulness Vayam Adal session. Actually, we were discussing Hemavata Sutta, which is also coming in the Sutta Nipata. Sutta Nipata is one of the books available in Kuddaka Nikaya, and very interesting suttas are recorded there, collected there. And now we are going through this Hemavata Sutta. Actually, last week we started that and we understood that how two yakkas, one called Satagira and the other one is called Hemavata, they are having a discussion. And how Hemavata is asking various questions, and then how Satagira is explaining them, giving various answers. And when this Hemavata didn't have any understanding about the Buddha, so he's asking various questions whether to verify whether he is the real Buddha. And then, of course, this Satagira already has met Buddha and already have faith in him. So he is explaining little by little to Hemavata. Ultimately, they decide to go and meet the Buddha. So, and once he met the Buddha, so they are asking various questions. And now we stopped at that point. So if I recall the last question that they ask, Kismin loko samuppanno, kismin kubbati santhavam, kissa loko upadaya, kismin loko vihanyati. In what has the world has arisen? Based on what? And in what does it form intimacy? Form intimacy. I mean, how the whole world get entangled, how the whole world make various attachments. And having clung to what, is the world afflicted in regard to what? Now basically, even though we perceive as a whole world, we perceive as Sri Lanka, we perceive as Australia, we perceive as England, we perceive as Earth, we perceive as the whole world, whole universe. Now all these things are with respect to our senses. So we have six internal senses. Eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, and then mind, and through which actually we are trying to understand or experience the whole internal and external world. So therefore it's a very much like a transaction between internal sense organs and as well as the external sense objects. So this is what is called world. So according to the Buddha's teaching, according to the Noble Dhamma, so that is how Buddha defines the world. So this internal and external sense basis can be considered as the world, because through which actually we are trying to perceive. Actually we recognize, we understand the whole world with respect to these senses. So if our senses are distorted, if our senses are providing us wrong information, then our understanding, our perception related to the world is also distorted, also very much like perverted. So that's why, are we living in the same world? So is my world and your world are the same? Is the my perception regarding the world and your perception regarding the world, are these two the same? Or are they different? Then are we in different worlds? So these are very interesting questions that we can ask. So basically, therefore, this world view can vary depending on our conditioning of the mind and our, say, accuracy of our senses. And with respect to our sense experience, we are defining the world. We are experiencing the world. So then Buddha mentioned, Chasu loko samuppanno, chasu kubbati santhavam, channa meva upadaya, chasu loko vihanyati. So he, Buddha mentioned here, the sixth world, the world has arisen. So basically these six senses, internal sense organs, with respect to that, the world is being very much like perceived. And then with respect to the outside, sights, sounds, smells, tastes, tangibles, and mental objects. And with that, they are maintaining kind of a close intimacy, kind of a strong relationship. And then we actually forget that this kind of a transaction happens, this kind of a process is going on. We forget and we think that I am living, I am an individual, I am a person, I am so and so. And I am in this world, I am at this particular country, I am at this particular place. And I am talking to you. So you are different. So we are two people, we are two groups, we are two nations, we are two countries. So we are putting all these different notions, different conventions into the picture, and we are putting various individual type of I-related, mind-related, you-related, all these linguistic information into the picture. And with respect to all these, and on top of that, we have a lot of cultural conditioning, educational conditioning, social conditioning, religious conditioning also are there. So with that, we are getting a kind of a colorful world, a colored world, conditioned world. So that is our typical understanding of the world. Now, Buddha tried to very much like unentangle this whole puzzle. Buddha trying helps us to very much like look at this whole perception, understanding about our world in a different way. Now, further questions are being asked. Katamantang upadanam yatta loko vihanyati. Niyanam puchito bruhi katam dukkha pamunchati. Now, another question is asked. What is it that clinging in which the world is afflicted? So, what they are going to cling? What they are going to clung to? And so how we are being opened up. Niyanam puchito bruhi. So I am asking how we are going to release, how we are going to open ourselves. How is one is released from the suffering? Because very much like we are being trapped, we are being imprisoned. So how are we going to be released from this prison? So is there any way of release? Now then Buddha mentioned, Panchakama guna loke mano chattha pavedita itta chandang virajetva evan dukkha pamuchyati. Now to what we are going to attach, to what we are going to clung to, are those five sense cords, sensual pleasures, sight, sound, smell, tastes, tangibles. So they are the most prominent, primordial kind of pleasures we have, and we are being bound to that, we are being attached to that, we like that, we desire that, we want to possess it. So we are very much like limited to that. So when I am seeing something, when my eyes are focused on something, so my vision is fairly impaired, my vision is fairly narrowed, fairly limited to what I see. So then I can't see something else because my vision, my sight is very much limited to what I am seeing. So when I am hearing something, so that is my perception, that is my experience. As a result of that, my whole other understanding might be kind of hindered. So likewise, when these senses are working, so they capture our attention. They limit our attention, they focus our attention, and they inhibit the other senses. So that whatever the current prominent experience become our main thing, and the, all the other things, all the other experiences become very much like subsided. So in a way, what we are experiencing is very much like a partial experience. So Buddha mentioned here, Panchakama guna loke mano chattha pavedita. Five strands of sensual pleasure, with mind as sixth, are declared in the world. Having removed desire for these, now, so that bondage has to be removed. So we have kind of a bondage towards sights, sounds, smells, taste, tangibles, and we are constantly trying hard to acquire them, trying hard to experience them, trying hard to enjoy them. But the opposite is mentioned by the Buddha. So till we are being dragged by them, till we are being hindered by them, till we are being entangled by them, till we are being bound by them, we are not released. Then in order to release ourselves, then we have to remove that desire, remove that bond, remove that attachment, remove that clinging towards those external sense objects. And even the mental objects. So the mind has to be released from all these external sense objects, internal sense objects. So then we can say, okay, mind has released. So it could be a temporary release at the beginning, but one has to work out how to make it a permanent release, a lasting release. Etang lokasa niyanam akkhatango yathatatham. Etang vo aham akkhami evam dukkha pamunchati. This outlet from the world has been expounded to you just as it is. This is what I declare to you. One is thereby released from suffering. So very much, so Buddha further confirming his answer. So one has to relinquish all these desires and then you don't feel bound. You are not feeling trapped. Rather your mind get released. Kosu idha tharati yogam, ko idha tharati annava. Appatitte analambe, ko gambhire nasidati. Who is crossing the flood here? Here who is crossing the flood? And who crosses the sea? Here who is crossing the sea? And who does not sink in the deep, which is without foothold, without support? So in a different way, kind of poetic way, the question is asked. Now there are the deep ocean, so there is no footing one can have there. And there is no support when you are there. And who is going to cross that flood? Who is going to cross that sea? Who is not going to sink in that sea? Sabbada sila sampanno panyava susamahito ajjatta chinti satima ogham tharati duttaram. Now there are the practice is highlighted here. Sabbada sila sampanno. Now the sila, the morality is highlighted. Every time, every moment one is trying to be virtuous, always accomplished with in the virtues, in good behavior. And panyava, and one is insightful, one is wise, endowed with wisdom. Susamahito, and maintaining proper clarity of mind, collectedness of mind. So that is the samadhi. Rather than telling concentrated, we can say fairly collected. One's mind is not distracted. One know what is happening right now. Well established mindfulness. So basically, sila samadhi panya. So Buddha highlights here the morality, collectedness, concentration, and the panya, the wisdom. And when these things are available, ajjatta chinti satima. Now his attention is very much inward and he is continuously having kind of an introspection. Rather than looking fault at others, rather than trying to sort of correct the outside world, now he is very much trying inwardly. Now it's an inward journey. And he is reflective all the time. Looking at one's mind, understanding what is going on, what are the defilements available, whether one being distracted, whether the mindfulness is available, whether the mindfulness is established, whether the mind being hindered, whether the mind being obstructed, or the mind being released. Mind is fully liberated. At least temporary is the mind free from any defilements. So one is constantly watching oneself. So rather than completely driven by outside external sense objects, sight, sound, smells, tastes, and tangibles, and even thoughts. Now one has one's own refuge. While being there, while in that mindful refuge, in the present awareness, say there, while you are being there, that means you have morality, you have correctedness, and you have wisdom. And ajjata chinti, now your attention is very much inward, satima, and you are mindful. Ogham tarati duttaram, and that person is capable of crossing the flood, which is more difficult to cross. And so basically we can see the qualities, the prerequisites, put the highlight here. Sabbada sila sampanno. So one is maintaining one's good conduct, the morality. So you are a virtuous person. So understand one, why Buddha emphasized these virtues? Why Buddha emphasized the morality, the sila? So basically our defilements are so strong. So if we are not having the support of sila, if you are not having the protection of sila, then immediately we may even implement what we are thinking, what we think, various thoughts we are going to implement, then ultimately we would be in trouble and the others also in be trouble. So basically harmful to both sides. If you are implementing various kinds of desires, various kinds of ill will or defiled thoughts, then immediately if we implement them, act according to them, then that would be harmful to ourselves as well as to the others. Now, when one protects sila, so you always have a kind of a regard. Okay, is this going to breach the sila? Am I going to make a transgression? A vitikkama? So am I going to break the sila? So you are a little bit of responsibility is there. So your own duty is there. Your own mind is inclined towards maintaining good morality, and you don't want to break it. So it's a kind of an upliftment of the mind. So you are in a way training the mind to abide by the morality. So rather than allowing the mind to gush into various kinds of desires, afflictions, breaches, and ultimately get into trouble, now you have a kind of a break. So mindfulness is the break. Mindfulness is having kind of a balancing. It's always monitoring our mind. And whenever desires are there, whenever various defilements are there, rather than immediately being victimized to them, now you have a kind of a break to apply and then look back and see what is going on. So satima, the mindfulness is there. And that person can cross the flood. Virato kama sanyaya sabba sanyojana tiko nandi bhava parikhino so gambhire na sidati. Now, so here the gambhire means the flood, the, we can say, the defilements. So defilements are very much like a flood. And so we being constantly being deluded by them, we are being affected by them, we are being trapped in them, we are being driven by various floods of defilements. Now who is going to escape from that? Who is not going to sink in that? And virato kama sanya. Now if we consider our mind, now suppose that one is constantly practicing, one is continuing the mindfulness practice, developing cittanupassana, developing dhammanupassana, trying hard to maintain a pure mind with established mindfulness, and later one may slowly start recognizing unestablished mind or unestablished kind of awareness. So mindfulness is not established at anywhere, at any object. Now the mind is temporarily released. So when one is capable of recognizing this released state of mind, and now if you look at the state of the mind, clarity of the mind, so you probably can understand, okay, mind is free from any sanya, any kinds of stains. It is not colored by anything. Stains are free. No stains in the mind. So mind has the clarity, kind of a luminosity, kind of a transparency is there in the mind. So very much like we were looking at blinkers, looking through some colored glasses, but now that glass being removed, now we can see through, now we can see properly, now we can see correctly. So likewise, when the mind is hindered, now when the mind is colored, when the mind is conditioned, when the mind is trapped in various perceptions, various thoughts, various mental images, name and form, so then actually we are not released. Mind is not released. Mind is trapped. Mind is captured. Mind is hindered. Mind is trapped. So as one practices Dhamma, so time to time one encounter this released state of mind and assume that you are encouraging that, maintaining that. And then Buddha mentioned, so the Kama Chanya is not there. So various images, mental images are not crowded in the mind. Some Sabba Sanyojana Tigo. So all the fetters are being overcome. So you are very much aware of various thoughts, defilements arising in the mind, and you are trying hard to avoid any kind of defilements. Trying to avoid any kind of bewilderment by defilements. Overwhelming type of defilements. So you are there, okay, defilements are there. Let me free from them. Let me avoid them being inflicted in my mind. So you are maintaining kind of a opposite direction, opposite force. Rather than being victimized to defilements, now you are trying to be released from defilements. Nandi bhava parikhino. So all these, therefore, the defilement-based delight is now fairly destroyed. And so you being born to something, attached to something, clung to something, and then being born to that, you are trying to be in delight with that. So that kind of a very artificial type of delight. Artificial kind of bhava, existence, becoming, is now slowly abandoned. Probably you can remember in Patisamuppada, the Buddha mentioned, upadana paccaya bahu. So when we are bound to something, when we are trapped into something, when we are attached to something, when we are clung to something, as a result of that, we are being born to something. We are being born to a different world. So we are no more in the present moment. We are no more in the ordinary state. We are in an artificial state. We are in a mind-made state. We are in a conditioned state. So that is the birth. Now that being eradicated, so as one is continuing, so you are minimizing that kind of an artificial becoming process. So you are trying to keep the mind released, unattached, without grasping. So without grasping, you can't have that kind of an artificial becoming, that kind of artificial birth, mind-made state. So that preparation process, that construction process is now being fairly abandoned. So mind remains in the ordinary. Just be, just experience, just be in the present moment, just released in the present moment. So gambhire na siddhati. So that person does not sunk in the defilements, sunk in the deep sea, the sea or flood of defilements. Because in order to sunk in the defilements, you need to attach to them, you got to deluded by them. You got to overwhelm by them. You need to grasp them. You being a victim of them. Then only you being sunk. But here, Buddha explained, okay, that person who is mindful, who is introspective, and who is with virtues, who is with proper clarity of mind, and again, who is with wisdom. So that person is free from this kind of becoming process. So he is maintaining the clarity of the mind. So he is slowly abandoning all the fetters, bonds, and his mind is free from any stains, perceptions. And the different kind of delight that we typically acquire, experience through gratifying our senses, so that is also not available to him, because he understands it's more kind of a rough kind of gratification, defiled kind of gratification, harmful type of gratification. So he is trying to maintain the mind more and more free, free from any kind of attachment, free from any kind of grasping, free from any kind of becoming. And he is the person who is not being sunk in the deep sea. So with that, actually, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Actually, there are a few more slides to continue, and we can cover that next week. And if you have any questions, then we'll open the session for questions.
Asana Bande, we have four questions so far.
Right.
Question one of four, this is mindful walking. Dear Bante, when we are on walking practice, is it possible to be mindful on the sights we see? This is nearly impossible during the day-to-day activities, but when the mind is calm and well collected during the walking practice, I find it somewhat possible to observe changing of the view as picture frames changing at the turn of the walking. Thought of checking with Bante how we can be mindful on eyesight without generating thoughts or getting into thinking with metta. That's the end of the question.
Actually, this will happen naturally as you progress, because at the beginning, what we are trying to do is develop kind of a focused attention into the sensations on your foot. And later, once you are capable of having that, then later you are carefully observing various kinds of sensations, and very much like you are trying to understand their internal nature, their behavior, how they are inconstant, how they are changing, and how they are behaving according to their own agenda, and it's beyond our control. I mean, very much like we are trying to learn from them by observing their behavior. So once we are slowly doing this, and when the mind be getting more and more understanding about that, mind starts withdrawing from that. So it's a kind of a natural effect. So we don't need to force the mind to do it. As the understanding grows, the mind starts withdrawing from that experience. And mind become very much like a buoyant, very much like floating, not attached, not grasping anything. So you may be walking and you may even see something, but the mind is not interested on what you see. So various sights are now available. It could be even beautiful sights. Mind may even see them, but not interested. So various slides are changing, various sights are changing. So mind simply see them, but not entangled. So you are not ruminating, you are not talking about it. So mind is maintaining its clarity. Mind maintains its silence. So therefore, I mean, rather than you are trying to do it purposely, so if it happens naturally, then it is good. So then it is very much like effortless. So with effort, rather than you are trying to maintain kind of a unattached mind, uninvolved mind, how about having wisdom developed? And then mind itself is not interested of getting attracted to them, getting involved with them. Mind simply mind its own business. So then it is more interesting. Then you have nothing to do. Basically, you are simply walking to and fro, and mind simply look after itself. Various sights are passing, various sights are passing, sounds are passing, sounds are happening. Smells are happening. But mind is very much like looking after itself, mind its own business, not interested of all these external affairs. So that is the kind of approach that we encourage, rather than trying to forcefully have that kind of an experience.
Question number 2 of 4. This is mindful sitting. Venerable Sir, my sitting practice is mindfulness on breathing. After 5 to 10 minutes of observations, the breath fades away and becomes unrecognizable. My observations are the pressure applied by individual breaths on the nostrils, the volume, feeling of the breath, hot and cold nature, etc. After the breath fades away, I come to a spacious, calm space where I can observe sounds, touch, thoughts, body posture sensations, and sometimes the breath itself at a distance. However, I cannot stay in this calmness for long, not more than 5 to 10 minutes. I get pushed out to brush breath automatically. Venerable advised some time ago to be more mindful when this is happening. I tried many months, but I get distracted to some thought or observation while getting pushed out of this state. I also started identifying some body connections just before this, something like an uneasiness in my stomach area where I cannot identify exact location. Should I keep observing this body sensation? And much merits for your guidance. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, no harm. So you can observe these body sensations. Through that also you can learn. So basically, through this observation, we are learning. It's a kind of a direct observation, direct investigation. So more we investigate, more will be the wisdom. So more will be the wisdom, more will be release. So this wisdom, what Buddha mentioned, is kind of a released wisdom. Releasing wisdom. It is not kind of a trapped knowledge. So basically, if we consider a typical mundane kind of knowledge, say you are learning a kind of a subject which is more mundane, and then actually what you can even develop various kind of defilements based on that knowledge, you being trapped in that knowledge, your mind getting conditioned in that knowledge. So that is the mundane kind of knowledge. But here we are maintaining mindfulness, we are keeping our attention onto various phenomena and allow them to behave as they like, and through that we are learning, and that wisdom is kind of a releasing kind of wisdom. It actually fulfilled, complete, based on the release. That's why, say, Buddha again and again mentioned Vivekanisitam, Viraganisitam, Nirodhanisitam, Vasagga Parinamim. Vasagga Parinamim means, so the culmination or the crux of that wisdom is the release. So the completeness happens when the mind gets released. So therefore, I feel you can observe them, no harm. See whether more the observation, more will be the frequency of mind released. So then you can say, okay, I'm learning, mind is learning, mind is very much like developing. As a result of that, I am more and more experienced in this released state. And once the mind is released, I can maintain that for a long time. So likewise, these are the indicators telling us, okay, I'm progressing. Yeah, back to you, Chamila.
Question number 3 of 5. This general question. Dear Bhante, thank you for this wonderful program which helped us to build a gradual mindfulness practice. After a few years, we really see the benefits of developing mindfulness in life and how it enhances our focus and gratitude towards everything. Bhante often talks about when the practice builds momentum, one naturally gets disenchantment and dispassion towards worldly things. Does that mean initial awareness, alertness and gladness on everything fades away and one becomes passive? Appreciate your explanation. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, interesting question. Actually, so this is something that we can argue. Are we becoming more passive? So one can argue like that. So we can't say really we being passive. We can say we are not unnecessarily interfere. Because what happens is we interfere even to others' affairs. We don't know how to mind our own business. We interfere even to others' affairs unnecessarily and get into trouble. Now, with the practice, actually, then we understand to mind our own business. So, not interfering with everything. To more, very much like preferring seclusion. Preferring kind of satisfaction. So, satisfaction in the sense you are being alone, but you feel satisfied. You're being alone, you feel happy. You feel contented. So there's a kind of attitude change happens. So we can't say then it is kind of a passivity. So it is not that we ignore everything and we allow everything to happen as it likes and we don't bother maintain kind of a indifference. That is going to another extreme. That also can happen, but it's a like kind of an extreme. So that is why some kind of balance is required. So how are we maintaining kind of a balance? So, when are we deciding when to interfere, when I need to react, when I need to act, rather than saying react, when I need to act, so when I need to be silent, when I need to mind my own business, look after myself, being alone, not interfering. So, this is a kind of a critical question, critical decision. And I feel more and more we being mindful. So the mindfulness will tell us, okay, now is the time to act and now is the time to calm down. You better not get into picture. You better not talk. You better not act. You just look after yourself. Okay, now you better act. You better interfere. You better tell. You better talk. Now is the time for you to commit. So likewise, so we may start acting not based on impulse, not based on defilements, but based on the proper occasion. So it is not impulsive kind of action now we are taking. Rather, you can step back and watch the situation without any kind of passionate involvement, impulsive involvement. But when it is necessary, you can act also. So therefore, we can't say it is complete passivity, but for the others, they can interpret like you are now passive, because we also were very much interfering with others' affairs and we are overreacting, impulsively reacting. So this was our typical behavior some time back. Now, when we start changing ourselves, so others may even hint us, even sort of criticize us, telling now you are passive. But if we are not feeling like that, if we know that when it is necessary I can think, if it is necessary I can talk, if it is necessary I can act, so then we can't say that we are passive.
Question number 4 of 6. This is again a general question. Dear Bhante, last time in Q&A, you explained about what is manasikara, yoniso manasikara. Yoniso manasikara is something we see again and again in many suttas. How do you link and apply yoniso manasikara or wise reflection, as I understood, into our practice? As I understood, this is not related to the reflection reports we do in Q&A, but something immediately when we do mindful observation. Is that correct, Bhante? Much merits for your valuable insight. That's the end of the
question. Yeah, I mean, it's fairly correct, because yoniso manasikara has to be very much like inculcated to the practice. So, I mean, that is why we are very much like putting seeds of that through sampajanya. Now, say for example, when we are observing breath, so at the beginning, the Buddha's instruction is just be aware of the breath. Be aware of in-breath, be aware of out-breath. Sato asa sati, sato pasa sati. Now, Buddha mentioned the second state. Digang vasa santo, digang asa samiti pajanati. Rasang vasa santo, rasang asa samiti pajanati. So, this pajanati. Pajanati is a term more related to the wisdom. So now you are trying to see the characteristics of the breath. So breath being a very subtle phenomena, knowing its characteristics require very, very subtle analysis in a way. It is not the kind of analysis based on thinking, rather it's a subtle analysis based on silent observation. Now that silent observation, that silent analysis, that silent investigation is something promoted towards the Yoniso Manasikara. Now you are deeply looking at, you are carefully looking at, investigating carefully. So that is the Yoniso Manasikara. Now we are putting our mind into action, training our mind to do it. And later this training will be helpful to apply that kind of an approach to many, many different other places as well. Now it won't be limited to the practice. Now, when we are training our mind to look at breath in this way, to understand its subtle characteristics, so that training being used at any other place as well. Assume that you are now facing a kind of a problem, say family problem. So rather than simply looking at the surface value, you can think little deeply, what are the real causes for this problem to happen? So now you are trying to find out the roots. You are trying to find out the causes rather than trying to give a remedy to the symptoms. So recognizing the roots, recognizing the causes. So these are the essence of the Yoniso Manasikara. We are, rather than we limiting ourselves to the symptoms or the outside appearance, now we are trying to look deeply, finding out the roots, finding out the causes. So that is the Yoniso Manasikara. We are being now actually training ourselves during the meditation.
Mr. Bante emphasized that we should not choose observation at this stage. But if we get focused to the eyesight naturally, Bante, sometimes I find there's a natural situation of these observations, even when we apply pervaded mindfulness with metta. That's the end of it.
Chamila, can you repeat the question? It was a little, I mean, the signal was not strong enough.
Okay, yeah, yes, Bante. So it's a general question. Regarding the first question about being mindfulness on the eyesight, as I understood, Bante emphasized that we should not choose observations at this stage. What if we get focused on the eyesight naturally, Bante? Sometimes I find that there's a natural selection of these observations, even when we apply pervaded mindfulness with metta. That's the end of the question.
Actually, that better, I mean, purposely avoid then, because while walking, as you said, our eyesight can be located onto a particular place or focused onto a particular place, then our attention, then our concentration being spotted there, fairly collected there. So that indicates our mind being distracted to there, to that whatever the sight, it is not with the sensation. So sensation is the one we are now trying to focus our attention. That is our primary object. But now, unfortunately, eye has taken the attention. Eyesight, that focused eyesight has taken the attention, and then actually we are very much like doing a samatha practice. Say you are walking on a path, and that path has kind of a color, kind of a texture, and so basically a color, and to that color now your mind, your eyes being attracted, or eyes being pay some strong attention, and you are simply continuing that attention. So through the eyes, actually, we can't really recognize the direct kind of a change on that kind of a situation, because it's constantly available as it is. So, but the change happens, change can be perceived through the body. So our foot is touching the ground. Through the foot, we can recognize the change. Sensations are happening. Touching feeling, touching sensation happens. It changes and it disappears. So all these experiences, various phenomena, we are now trying to experience through the body, not through the eyes. So if our eyes being focused onto something, so it is very much like we are not getting the real benefit of walking meditation. The walking meditation, the real benefit is coming when we are paying more attention to the foot, and that object being constantly changing and the location being constantly changing. And we are still capable of maintaining our attention again and again, constantly or instantaneously to those different sensations. Immediately, we are capable of focusing, aiming our mind. So these are the skills that we are developing through walking meditation.
Question number 6 of 7 is a general question. Bhante, regarding mind your own business, does that mean when one realizes Dhamma, everything is left to what it is, governed by karma? That is the end of the question.
That is why, I mean, I think that also depends. So say someone is asking your help. So is that mean that you turn your self and say, I'm not going to help, this is your karma? So I think it is not the point. So we can't say that everything is karma, and if the opportunity is there for us to help, if the opportunity is there for us to interact properly, wisely, so that is actually the indifference. So when one has fairly developed in Dhamma, so his mind may be naturally resting with the Brahma Viharas. Metta, Mudita, Karuna, Upekka. So he doesn't need to say purposely develop them. So it is very much like the default nature of the mind. Say for example, now Venerable Sariputta. Now he had a student who is very unfortunate. He's called Lomasa or Loma, can't remember. So that student is quite unfortunate because of some past action, past karma. And whenever he go to alms round, so he don't get any food. So most of the days he is actually keeping, empty himself. So he's hungry, so there is no enough food for him. Venerable Sariputta being his teacher, so he was quite compassionate towards this student. So he didn't completely ignore this person, rather he wants to help him. So sometimes Venerable Sariputta has offered his own meal to this student. So you can see, Venerable Sariputta being the teacher and he being fully enlightened. So what's the kind of an attitude he had towards this student? So basically, therefore, we can't say the fully enlightened beings are very much like indifferent or passive, but their hearts are fairly cultivated with compassion, loving kindness, and they become their natural nature. Inherent nature. It doesn't mean that they interact immediately and unnecessarily, but they know the exact limit. So that kind of a thing, that's what I feel. So we can't say that they simply mind their own business, but rather when it is necessary they may react. So they may know exactly when to react or when to act properly. When to act properly, they know exactly. Yeah.
Question number 7 of 7. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, what is radical acceptance you mentioned in the guided sitting today? appreciate your kind explanation. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, there's a very beautiful book written by Dr. Tara Brach. So her book is named as Radical Acceptance. So basically, what we do is very much like partial acceptance. We want only the preferred ones. We want only the desired, pleasurable ones. And we want to get rid of all the undesirable, unliked, painful ones. So then what we accept is only the likable ones, only the beautiful ones. And we all discard the other ones. So this is a typical kind of filtering process happens in our mind. So we have kind of a framework. So what fulfills that framework, what satisfied that framework, we only accept. Everything else we are trying to discard. Everything else we are trying to push away. But in the typical and proper mindfulness process, so we open up ourselves. We are ready to accept everything. So there is no any kind of preference. So assume that you are simply listening to various sounds. And when you are simply listening to various sounds, so can you only selectively listen? So that is what we are trying to do. Say someone is making a noise, someone is blaming. Then you are closing your ears so that you can't listen to that. You can't hear it. But in the mindfulness practice, say when you are doing mindful listening, you got to open yourself even to listen everything. Either it could be pleasurable, either it could be little painful, blame or praise. You are trying to be equanimous to both. So that is kind of a radical acceptance. So whatever things happening, you are ready to accept. You are very much like courageous to accept, courageous to receive. It is not you are having kind of a very narrowed kind of acceptance. Rather, you have a very broad kind of acceptance. You can accept anything. You can accept the way it is. So you are developing that kind of an attitude, courageful attitude through the radical acceptance. So that is what I meant by radical acceptance.
Okay, that's the last question we had. So we have a lot of questions today, so we will wrap up the program now. I would first like to thank Bhante for his valuable time and his guidance. Also share the merits with the organizers and all beings, both seen and unseen, who enable this program. I would also like to thank and pass the merits to participants for joining the program today, for practicing and sharing their questions. Therwan Saranai. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Yeah, Therwan Saranai.